flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. I've been looking forward to this all day. Let's get to it. It is time, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, on a football Friday for the pick six at six. So normally on Fridays, we pick six players who we think will have the biggest impact in the game. And Anthony and I alternate. I pick one, he picks one. But Anthony's not here today, and it's the divisional round of the playoffs, and I got a lot to get to. So I'm just going to do this all by myself, and I'm pumped about it. I have so many things I cannot wait to talk about this football game. So getting started with number one. The number one guy that I'm going to circle for the Washington Commanders this weekend, and reminder that quarterbacks are ineligible. I almost broke that rule since it's just me today, but I almost said, hey, Jaden Daniels, you get to be a participant because he's obviously the biggest factor in this game. But non-Jaden, I'm going to go with Austin Eckler, and here is why. Austin Eckler is going to play quite a bit, not only by himself and some of their hurry up and third down, and you know, he's a huge part of what they do, generally speaking. But pony personnel is a term you might have heard on a Commanders broadcast this year. It's two running backs in the game, but specifically two halfbacks in the game. So two like traditional running backs, not a running back and a fullback, not a halfback and a fullback. It's two halfbacks in the game. And so whether that's Austin Eckler and Brian Robinson or Austin Eckler and Jeremy McNichols, we'll see if Chris Rodriguez is active this way. Eckler's going to be a part of these packages. And the Commanders led the NFL in usage and production out of pony personnel this season. The Commanders were efficient even at the high volume, averaging the fifth most yards per play of any offense with at least 50 plays in pony personnel in a season, not this season, since 2016. The Commanders used pony personnel on 9 plays in the wild card round, their third most in a game this season, gaining 99 yards. Now, that is a pretty big thing. Like, oh, they really leaned into it against the Bucs with Austin being back after he missed all that time with a concussion. By the way, also not returning kicks, which saves him a little bit more. And we'll see if they reverse course on that this weekend, or is Luke McCaffrey still the kick returner? But that fact, the high usage and the high efficacy of pony personnel is magnified by two related facts. The Lions were bottom 10 in the NFL. I think they might have even been bottom 5 in the NFL against pony personnel this year. So they did not handle it well. And I'm guessing that part of that is often the Lions were staying in their base defense because they play base defense more than anyone else in the NFL. Per Next Gen stats from NFL Pro, the Lions used base defense on a league high 51.7% of snaps on early downs this season. On third and short, they used base on 46.7% of snaps. That's fifth highest, but used nickel personnel on 94.8% of snaps on third and medium, plus the third highest rate in the NFL. So what that all means is, first of all, if you play certain personnel groupings, the Lions are going to match them a certain way. And honestly, they might not even care as much about your personnel groupings. They might just play what they want to based off their own, you know, down and distance markers. Hey, it's third and short, we're going to play base. If it's third and medium or third and long, we're going to play nickel. Doesn't matter what formation you're in. Now, most teams are going to play, some kind of whatever that's nickel-based or, honestly, dime-based. And I guess that's the difference here is the Lions are only going to go so light. They're not going to go dime. They're going to stay in their nickel. So can you take advantage of that? And then how does that match up with a guy like Austin Eckler? Because a lot of times when the Commanders get in pony personnel, as someone who watches a ton of tape and someone who charts personnel every week, you write down 21 pony on the Commanders column, you're going to write down nickel on the other, because teams will treat Eckler like a receiver because there's a really good chance he's going to get out in a route. Detroit, I don't think, is going to do that. So can you get in that look? Can you get in 12 personnel with Zach Ertz and Austin Eckler on the field together? 12 meaning one running back, two tight ends. So let's get John Bates in there, or even Ben Sidda, but John Bates is who's been there all year. But Bates, Ertz, and Eckler, and then let's go spread. Like, let's air it out. Cliff, your air raid roots are calling. Like, this is a really interesting matchup this weekend. So I've got Eckler as number one to watch because of how the Lions treat certain personnel packages and the options that exist for the Commanders. And by the way, one more on that, just for kicks and giggles. The Commanders play out of empty formations at the third highest rate and average the fifth most yards per play amongst offenses with at least 50 snaps out of empty this year. And Jaden Daniels led the NFL with touchdown passes out of empty. He had 8 on the season, tied for the most by a quarterback in a season, not for rookies, all quarterbacks, since 2022. Number 2 in our pick 6 at 6 is Percy Butler. What? A backup safety is your second most important non-Jaden Daniels guy? And look, we can talk about the actual importance of this, but he's the second guy that I want to absolutely talk about for kind of an inverse reason that I just talked about with the Lions and how they match personnel. So the Lions on offense also play big. They play with 6 offensive linemen a lot. They play in true 12 personnel with the 2 tight ends a lot. They will play with a fullback. Like, they will go heavy. And so the Commanders tend to not match that stuff in base all the time. Sometimes they will match it in base. Sometimes they'll put Michael Walker on the field or Jordan McGee on the field. Won't be McGee this weekend. He's out. But does Walker wind up getting some snaps? Maybe. And I'm sure at times, yeah. And he's a good enough run player that's not a thing that you have to really worry about. It's if they start passing out of some of that stuff where he's on the field and you're like, yikes. So what's the other option? Well, you don't want to go nickel. You don't want to have Noah Igbinoghene out there getting blocked by a tight end. But one thing the Commanders do quite a bit, especially earlier in the season, I feel like they've got away from this because Percy hasn't played as well, in my opinion, is they will go 3 safeties. So it's the big nickel. It's Buffalo nickel, if you want to throw back to last year's terminology, even though nobody wants to throw back to last year for anything for this Washington team. But it's Butler and Kwon on the back end, and Chin comes down in the box, or sometimes Percy Butler's playing down in the box. So if all of a sudden that becomes a viable solution for Washington, that throws a real wrench in Detroit's plans offensively on that part of their game plan. Look, Detroit has, they're a 17-pitch pitcher. They got a fastball, a changeup, a forkball, a knuckleball. Like, they got everything. They're good at everything. Like, you're not supposed to be able to throw 102 with movement and also have 58-mile-per-hour knuckleball that dances all over the place on its way to the plate. Like, that's not fair, but that's what Detroit's offense is. It's why they're the best scoring offense in the entire league. So if you can take some of those pitches away merely by having one of your guys who's had a bit of an up-and-down year play really effectively and free up the chins to go up and fit runs, or he's just making plays at the line of scrimmage, screaming out to screens and things like that, that would be enormous. The other big thing for Butler is he is the fastest player probably on their defense when he's out there. So, hey, Percy, if you are out there and you are on Jameson Williams' side of the field, please use that speed to make sure that you are out ahead of him, because they're going to try to get over the top. They'll go in heavy formations and then try to use some play action. And you better be ready for it. So if you're going to be the guy who's over the top, and Quan is there some, but sometimes it's Percy, you better be ready. And then the other area where Percy becomes huge is these crossing routes, these digs that they love to hit to Williams to try to get him deep and on the move and just let him catch and run and go. And especially, even more so than Williams, Amon-Ra St. Brown. That's his area of the field that he owns. And if Percy Butler is going to be in this game, he has got to say, hey, I'm going to announce my presence. And whether it's arriving with violent intentions and getting big hits, or, God forbid, get there early enough to get a pass breakup or a pick, that would be a huge boon for the Washington defense. Last thing on this personnel kick is someone that I already touched on a little bit, but I'm going to circle back to the Commanders offense. Number three is Zach Ertz. Because when you watch teams this year, and again, I chart personnel every game and have for the entire second half of the season. I always paid attention to it, but I literally started writing it down for every snap, in part because I wanted to see what teams do against Zach Ertz when he's on the field. Most teams treat him like a wide receiver. So if you go 12 personnel and the two tight ends are John Bates and Ben Sinnott, you get matched in base for most teams. If you do two tight ends and it's Bates and Ertz, you get nickel personnel for most teams. The Lions aren't most teams. And so if the Lions are going to match 1286, as I write it down in my notes, the 12 personnel, two tight end package with Zach Ertz on the field in base, can he have eight catches for 80 yards, get a bunch of first downs, and be really effective? And then maybe the Commanders don't have to run the football very effectively. They can just use the short passing game and have Ertz dominate that short area of the field and take the profits that the Detroit Lions are then giving you based off the people on the field alone. Also, what do they do out of 11 personnel? If the Detroit Lions are going to say, hey, all right, now you're an 11, we're going to be a nickel, like, and Zach Ertz is the guy who's on the field, can the Commanders run out of that? Because often, if they're going to do that, they will put in John Bates and try to run there. But if Zach Ertz can do his part as a blocker and kind of surprise, catch Detroit off guard with some runs, I think that could be a big thing this weekend as well for the Commanders. He's got to have, I mean, one, he's their go-to guy on fourth downs. I think that's worth mentioning as well. The Commanders are going to go for it on fourth downs, and he's one of the places they go. Cliff Kingsbury said this week, when they had that fourth and five last week, they drew up a play basically for Ertz. It was like, we're getting the ball in his hands. He's our guy here. So red zone, third and fourth down, and the personnel matching element of it, Zach Ertz, big, big, big weekend for him. Number four in our pick six. Well, you'll find out that, number five and number six next. But first, let's get an update on the latest in the world of women's sports, presented by Wawa. Chicken how you wanna at Wawa, with customizable crispy or roasted chicken sandwiches.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you, so listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. Coming up in about 10 minutes, can the Commanders' defensive line throw some kind of wrench in the Detroit offensive line and what they're able to do in the run game and in pass protection? Logan Paulson gives his best shot at an answer at 6:30. Right now, though, we continue with our pick six at six. Number four in our pick six at six is Noah Igbinoghene, who is a name that we probably should have mentioned in this segment more often this year. But he is a guy that has a gargantuan task potentially this weekend, and that is to chase around Amon-Ra St. Brown in the roughly 50% of the snaps that he lines up in the slot. Now, he is prolific, and he is a part of just an insane group of skill players that Detroit has. In fact, St. Brown, Williams, and Gibbs each scored a touchdown in the same game five times this season. That's the most by any teammate trio in NFL history. But specifically, when we talk about Amon-Ra St. Brown, he lined up at wide or out wide, as in not in the slot, on over half of his snaps for the first time in his career this season, a mark more than double than his wide alignment from his 2021 rookie season. He was 51% outside. He caught 67 of 75 targets when aligned wide for 740 yards and five touchdowns, resulting in his highest catch rate, by any receiver with at least 25 targets from wide alignment in a season since at least 2016 when they started tracking all of this stuff. So he has moved outside quite a bit. And those big, deep over routes, those big, deep digs that he likes to get hit on and then run after the catch and then dance and do his thing, like, those, a lot of them come from these wide alignments. So why is Noah Igbinoghene so important? Because you still have the other 49% of the snaps. And as a run player, where at times St. Brown is not quite as locked into the run game, he's really, really, really excellent as a wide receiver blocker, but he'll occasionally lose focus. Can you go make a play in the run game? Can you cover him when he is on that 49% of snaps in the slot, you know, on third down in key situations with a two-way go and you're in man-to-man coverage all on your own? Like, that is the hardest job, arguably, in all of football. We know, and we've talked about this year, how volatile the corner position is, and in some ways, it's even harder inside. But here's the other part about Amon-Ra St. Brown, and I'm curious how the Commanders handle this situation. St. Brown ran 30 routes this year. That's a little under two per game from an in-line alignment, second most amongst receivers, trailing only Puka Nacua. Caught six or seven targets in those 30 routes, two touchdowns, scoring both those two touchdowns on snaps in the red zone. So when he lines up on the line of scrimmage, basically as a tight end, like, he'll line up with his two-point stance split like a wide receiver, but like, he's in a tight end alignment. How do they treat him then? Is that Noah Igbinoghene's job, or does Marshawn Lattimore or Mike Sainer still come inside? So it is a gargantuan task to try to deal with him. And by the way, if the Commanders try to blitz, St. Brown has converted 27 first downs against the blitz this season, tied with Mike Evans for the most in the NFL. So on those quick routes, in those big situations, when St. Brown is lined up in the slot, kind of his home, even though he's converted very well to an outside guy, can Noah Igbinoghene prevent, A, the big one? Because there are times this year that Noah's not just giving up, you know, a catch here, a catch there. He'll miss a tackle or he'll be burned bad enough that there's a big one. And that's where this defense absolutely goes to die. And then in the run game, can you be an effective part of the run support when Amon-Ra St. Brown is in front of you, or when Tim Patrick, because that's the other thing. Part of the reason they've been able to do this is Tim Patrick's been really, really good as a third wide receiver for them. So is that a matchup that Washington can win? Igbinoghene's had a very up and down season. This would be one hell of a week for an up game. Number five in our pick six at six, Daron Payne. He got hurt last week making a play in the backfield. I would like him to make more plays in the backfield. I would not like to see him hurt. And I think the Daron Payne on the edge conversation, it's pretty clear they want to use him on the edge. They did. They used him on the edge last week. They used him on the edge. They used John Allen on the edge a little bit. So is that a way that they can stop the run while still having good pass rush personnel out there? And that then becomes a key question. Can the Commanders, if they use this big personnel, especially if the Lions are using two tight ends and some of the stuff they're doing, can they then still get a pass rush against the best offensive line or one of the two or three best offensive lines in football? Payne got paid in large part because he had an 11-sack season. And his pressure rate hasn't really changed that much over his career. He just finished really well that year. You got to finish. And so inside, when he's rushing, can he get some pressure? And can you hold up when you, against those interior runs when Detroit's going to run the ball from under center straight at you? When you are on the edge, can you, A, hold the edge because Jahmyr Gibbs getting outside is a nightmare? And B, if they decide to pass on you, if they zig, when you're playing for Zag, can you make it so that you still have a pass rush? That, to me, are the key questions for Daron Payne. You kind of ask the same questions about John Allen. You ask the same questions about Jalen Holmes on a lot of that as well, as the other guy who's going to be on the edge in some of these run sets. I almost put Dante Fowler in here as well, because if there's a guy that could have a big pass rush game, can Dante Fowler have one of those days? Like, that would be huge for the Commanders. But I think Daron is the guy that's like, hey, man, you're getting paid a lot of money. We know what you're capable of. You started to play better later in the season. Can you make a couple of disruptive plays? Because even if you give up, say, a chunk play, say you give up a chunk play, it's now the ball at the 40-yard line, you're plus 40, you were at the minus 30, they get a 40-yard gain, you get a tackle, or sorry, a 30-yard gain, you get a tackle, first and 10, Daron Payne tackle for loss, now it's second and 12. Well, now we're back in business. Those plays are going to be the way that Washington can survive defensively in this game. Last but not least, number six in our pick six. Deami Brown's been in our pick six a lot this season for good reason. But even more so since Noah Brown went out, he has become an essential part of this offense. And if the Lions are going to double Terry, which if they play man coverage, they very well might. It's kind of what they did to Justin Jefferson in week 18. And Sam Darnold left 150 yards and four touchdowns on the field. And Justin Jefferson had a touchdown go through his hands. But they ultimately did hold Justin Jefferson to 50 yards on three catches. I think it was 3 for 54. So if they're going to be able to focus in on Terry, and whether it's Amik Robertson having another day, or whether it's because Kirby Joseph, one of the best intercepting safeties in the league, a guy who made All-Pro this year, or Brian Branch is lurking over Terry, especially if Branch is lurking over some of those slant routes and things, and you're not trying not to get Terry lit up on a slant, Deami's going to be the guy who's singled out one-on-one. That, or they're going to be playing too high stuff, and the Commanders better be able to run the football. But I do think that Deami getting one or two big ones would be huge. And last week, he had multiple catches on balls that were 10-plus yards in the air. If he can repeat that performance, I think the Commanders have a chance. If not, I find it a hard, unless they're able to do, you know, going back to the start of this pick six with Austin and with Zach, or Brian Robinson has a day he hasn't had in 2 months. Like, unless one of those kind of more mundane, smaller, matriculate the ball down the field type of approaches just happens at an extraordinarily high level, it's going to take some chunks. Deami's a guy who can get you chunks. They need Terry too, but I'm going to put the spotlight on Deami to wrap up our pick six at six. When we get back, let's take a look at the Commanders' defensive line against the Lions' offensive line. It is one of the scariest matchups for Washington in this game. How do they make it less scary? Logan Paulson with the answers next on The Hoffman Show. It's The Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. There is really just one thing left to do for this game, which is pick it. I guess kind of, but there's as I said, there's endless amounts of matchups. So I could, if we wanted to, just let's take the show like basically until we start our live coverage at 10 a.m. tomorrow, and I can find stuff to talk about with this game. It's wild. One of those things that we're going to talk about in a moment is the Commanders' defensive line versus the Lions' offensive line, which is, I think if you ask Commanders fans, perhaps the matchup they are rightfully most scared about, and you'll hear Logan Paulson's thoughts on that in about 60 seconds. But we are going to pick it coming up at the end of the show, and I do want to tell you our coverage does start early. Earlier in the week in the rundown. Max, have you been looking at the schedule all week?
Oh,
like
yeah.
Because you're probably working some of this weekend.
I am here tomorrow night, all night. I'll be here 6 p.m. for pregame, and then I'll be here till 2 a.m. for postgame.
Whew, that's a shift, my guy.
Oh yeah.
So earlier in the week it was like, oh, our pregame coverage is gonna start at 3. And next thing you know, it's like it's starting at noon. And then I hear the promo today, it's starting at 10. So we have live local coverage starting at 10 a.m. tomorrow on the Team 980 and 106.7 The Fan, going on throughout the entire day. Russell's doing a show from Detroit. I think Grant's doing a show. I'm actually visiting family right now. Like, I wasn't even supposed to be working the last 2 days. And so if you're watching on YouTube and you're like, Craig, where the hell are you? We didn't get a new studio in D.C. I'm actually at our Odyssey Studios in Greenville, South Carolina, where my parents and my grandmother live, because I needed to come down and visit them, and this was the time that worked. And I was like, well, look, if the Commanders are still playing, then your boy's going to do some shows from the stations that he interned at when he was in high school. And if not, then I'll take the days off. And so here we are. I'm doing the shows. But luckily, I've got the weekend to just enjoy the game. But I will be doing, from literally my parents' house, which is some kind of podcasting cliche, I will be doing from my parents' house a live post game tomorrow night on YouTube that you'll hear in the Take Command feed if you're not going to be up for it. If you're just going to go to bed after the game, you can listen to that on Sunday at your leisure. But right now, speaking of Take Command, Logan, me, the trenches. Let's get it to wrap up before we leave that pick as the last thing to do here on the Hoffman Show. And then you get to the part where they will also just hit the ever-loving hell out of you. And yep, up front, they are nasty in their run game. They will move you. It's not any more difficult than that. Like, they do have the athleticism to get on the edge, but like, no matter where it is, straightforward, we're running duo, we're running inside zone, we're running tight zone, we're just getting up, we're hitting you and moving you off the spot, or hey, we're pulling Penei Sewell and now you have Big 58 running at you full speed. Like, that is the most devastating offensive line puller in the league since prime Trent Williams. Like, mm-hmm. It is just a different level of capabilities. And I think you not only see that on the run game, but you see that sometimes on the screen game as well, where they'll run a screen to the right, let Sewell get out there, and he's the only guy in the league that can actually get out there and hit that block, but he can do it every time. And so There's just a devastating nature to their offensive line that we'll see probably most often in the run game. And I think because of the lightness of Washington up front, that becomes a real interesting matchup. And I think it's a shame in a way that we've saved it till this deep in the podcast, because I think this is the thing that a lot of Commanders fans are most worried about.
And they should be. No, I'm just kidding. No, like, so this is what I'll say.
Anyone should be against the Lions. They're the best run team in the league.
The backbone of this team is the offensive line. So we just talked about all the playmakers, right? We talked about, oh, this guy's fast and look at, all this stuff. But the pass game works because the offensive line. The run game works because the offensive line. And they are physical, they're fast, they're aggressive, they're confident. The tight ends understand how to block, right? You watch, especially with the addition of Zeitler. Like, I don't know if he's healthy. I know he was on the injury report earlier this week. Might have been a rest day, I don't know. But him and Penei Sewell working together on a three technique is a scary proposition. They just blow people off the ball, and they're both athletic enough to get to the spot. And then you add Frank Ragnow to that. Like, he is playing really good football. Taylor Decker, great job. And again, the offense that they're calling insulates them too, right? Because a lot of their drop back pass stuff is on first down. It's with a play action. It's off a keeper. So it just allows them to be so confident, so aggressive, and so physical that, like, they make the pass go, they make the run go, and it's not as efficient as I think as everyone's got in their mind. They're committed to it now. They possess the football offensively, and we always talk about this on the show. They get a lot of bites at the apple to run the ball, and eventually David Montgomery is going to break four tackles for a 20-yard gain, or Jahmyr Gibbs is going to break one out for 60, right? Because they are committed to it, right? I just talked about how in the Green Bay game, they had a hard time in the first half consistently running the ball, but they possess the ball enough where it's like, hey, we're 20 plays in, and then obviously, Montgomery hits a duo, breaks a tackle, and it's a 20-yard gain. You're like, damn, like we were so good on those other five runs that they ran earlier, and now the run average is exactly where it's supposed to be. It's 5 yards a carry for them. So I think that's something that it's – the running thing is scary. It's the consistency of the offense in general that is the most scary thing because, again, when you play a running team, you get them off rhythm, you get them off schedule, they can't overcome it. This team can for sure overcome it, and they overcome it consistently, and they overcome it well. And then you pile on top of that the fact that they're going to go for it on fourth down. Like, they're going to go for it. If they're plus 50, they're going for it. And it allows them to hold the football for such a long time. Like, when you look at the Green Bay game, 80 offensive snaps for Detroit, 50 for Green Bay. Like, they're just not going to let you play. If that's the game flow and the Commanders can't stop them and the Commanders go three and out at some point offensively, it could be a very long day very, very quickly. And that's, again, because of how skilled this offense is and because of how diverse the defense is, you're walking this razor's edge in terms of what has to happen for the Commanders to win.
Totally. And I've used this analogy this week. Like, the NBA draft lottery, the way it works is there's 1,000 ping pong ball combinations. And of those, if we're saying this is a lottery with 1,000 combinations, there's a lot more of those combinations than I would like to admit that come up with the Commanders losing in a major blowout type of fashion. Yeah. Just because there's so many different game scripts where it gets out of hand for Washington, because that's how good Detroit is. Now, there's a couple that also go Washington's way in a big way, which would be really the one game script that Washington wins comfortably is Jared Goff has a day where he turns the ball over three or four times. Right. And like one of them is a pick six and on down the list. Like, you have one of those, a special teams touchdown, like, sure, Washington could win in a blowout. There's a lot of in the middle where either team wins a close game. And that's where I think ultimately it probably comes out. But there is, of those four possible outcomes, there's like a 25 or maybe even higher chance that Washington gets blown out because of exactly what you're talking about. I would say the one like firewall on that is the idea that Jaden Daniels has to drop back 50 times doesn't necessarily scare me. No. And I think for a lot of teams in the league, part of the reason that blowouts can get out of control is because if all of a sudden you have to abandon the run game and rely on your quarterback, there's not enough guys that can do that. Jaden is one of them. And Fortier and I talked about this on the radio on Wednesday, if people want to check that out in the Hoffman Show feed here in a couple of minutes, because I promise an hour in, we're almost done. But if folks want to go check that out, Sam talked about like that's a game script that, you know, 50 dropbacks where he's got 40 attempts and 10 rushes. Like, that's not exactly a terrible plan for Cliff Kingsbury and Jaden Daniels on offense. So I do think that is a good firewall that if there are a couple of drives early, that Detroit is able to do whatever they want. And Washington does have a three and out. And all of a sudden, it's 14-0 at the start of the second quarter. Washington's not out of it in the way that other teams would be out of it. Because you can trust Jaden to put together a drive or two. And if you can just get one stop, one turnover, and that's going to be the other big thing here, is can you take advantage when Goff gives you opportunities? Or can you punch the ball out? This is going to be a super physical game. Can you get a turnover? Can you fall on it? Like, these are the questions that are going to decide winning and losing for Washington in an even more heightened way than they always decide winning or losing for Washington.
No, I mean, that's the narrative. That's what it's got to be. I think the way they played Tampa Bay is exactly how they have to play the Detroit Lions. And this is going to be a little bit different because I think Tampa Bay's defense is probably better. They're better at stopping the run. They're a little bit faster, right? Not that Detroit's a bad defense, like we said before, but they just have more weapons defensively. So, like, I think they'll be able to run the ball a little bit more effectively. I think there'll be some other things they can get to, right? But the second they get a three and out on Detroit, you got to go score. You got to hold the ball for a long time, and you got to go score. Like, there's no compromise there. It's like, you got to go for it on fourth down. We got to make it happen. Because if you go back and punt, they're for sure going to score. Like, they possess the football. They score touchdowns. They can run the ball. Like, it's just a sleeping giant. And when you look at games where they've had a hard time, Detroit, the offense has possessed the football. They've been hyper-aggressive, and they've scored touchdowns instead of field goals. Like, this is a game where it's like, throw all your traditional view of, like, field goals, take the points. No. We got to score touchdowns. And the second that they turn the ball over or they go three and out, we have, as an offense, have to capitalize to, because you're only going to get a couple. And that's the thing that's going to cause the difference in the swing of the game. And the other thing about this game that's going to be crazy too, potentially, is you might only get 8 possessions. Like, yes, it's going to be a tight game.
Because so both teams are trying to play like that.
Every possession is going to be incredibly critical. Incredibly critical. And so the second you get a turnover, let's go get that done, because that could be the moment that wins the game for you.
And let's see about the kicking game. Obviously, Zane just had that big kick, but their kicker is very, very good. Bates has hit a bunch of big ones this year. If, God forbid, there is a punt in this game, like, how does that go on a coverage standpoint? And, and can you pin the opposition deep? Special teams, can you get a return? Jamison Crowder getting healthier by the week here. He was upgraded to a full participant in practice yesterday. And the other thing I do wonder on special teams real quick on the way out here, Logan, you know, Eckler gets named second team All-Pro as kick returner. Luke's still returning kicks. I wonder if they go back to Austin this week, or if Austin is like, hey, I kind of got some PTSD from how I got concussed, which is a very real thing, by the way. I'm not saying that flippantly. Like, yeah, he might be like, hey, look, yeah, I don't, and I'm not saying like I know that he has this. I'm saying that the idea that that could be the thing is something that is very real and a possibility psychologically. So do they just stick with Luke, who's done a really good job, and say Austin's too important to our offense? But that is another weapon that could potentially make its way back. Say, hey, if there's going to be more kick returns in this game, because Detroit's offense is awesome, do we put Austin Eckler back there and see if we can pop one of our own? Because he is, you know, while Luke has been good, Austin's better at it, which is why he was named second team All-Pro. Anything else? Or is an hour 4 minutes good for podcasting for one day?
Man, I'm excited. I'm a little scared, but I'm excited. You know, I think it's going to be a really cool game. And I think the one thing about this that maybe we haven't talked about is just the like the emotional confidence of the team. You know,
yes,
like they believe in themselves, and there's something really special about that. And so on paper, we just lined up all the reasons why Detroit, you know, you see the ping pong ball analogy. I love that. There's a lot of way, like a lot of universes where they win, right? But the belief, the confidence, the brotherhood, the playmaking ability of Jane Daniels, like I've never really felt this way as a Commanders analyst or player, where it's like,
yeah,
shoot, we got a shot. Even though this deck is stacked crazy, like we got a shot. And I think that's a pretty cool thing. I can't wait to see it, like how they rise to this moment against what I think is maybe the best team in the NFL. So that's something that I'm really curious about in watching this.
I am too, and in part because I think the same thing is true on the other side. Like,
yes,
I think that the team that probably has that the most outside of Washington in the entire league is Detroit.
Yeah.
And so they were, in many ways, is to bring this full circle, like they are the model for what Washington is trying to do from kind of a culture standpoint. And so they also believe, they believe this is their time. They believe that, like, this is who we are. You know, they have a strong identity. And I think in many ways, like, this is a test of Washington to be like, you're going to look yourself in the mirror here. And obviously there's a ton of talent differences in terms of where the talent is dispersed. Washington has the better quarterback in the game. That gives me confidence on the Washington side. Seems like a relevant plot point in a playoff game. Who's got the better quarterback? But you're not going to be able to just like out physical this team. You're not going to be able to out believe the Detroit Lions. So when those two things, those meters of belief are at 10 and they collide at 8:15 on Saturday night, what happens? That's what makes the sport fun. That's what makes being this deep into the playoffs fun. And I can't wait. I'm very jealous of you, frankly, for getting to be there on the sideline for it. And it's going to be an electric atmosphere. Can't wait to talk about it with you next week.
Want more from Craig and Logan? Subscribe now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. More Hoffman Show next on the Team 980 and the free Odyssey app.
It's the Hoffman Show, wrapping up here on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. One thing left to do, which is make our picks, which I will try to get Anthony's picks on the record. Obviously, they won't be on the radio show, but I'll make sure that he gets them written down so we can't pull some shenanigans on Monday, before we get to the Commanders game. And one other key that I haven't really talked about as much as I would have liked this week, we actually did talk about it quite a bit, I guess, on Take Command, which is where we get into the most depth. So if you want even more preview, we just gave you like the last 10 minutes of the show. The first 50 is pretty darn good. So if you missed any of Take Command, go ahead and check that out in the Take Command podcast feed. But there's one other thing I want to talk about in a second. But for the other games this weekend, for the records, for the picks, I got Kansas City, Philly, Baltimore on the other three games. So Kansas City, who I think wins kind of in a blowout, to be honest. I think the Philly Rams game could be close and weird and honestly not even that enjoyable, but probably dramatic. And I think Philly will come out ahead. And then I think that Baltimore has enough to get it done. I think it's a lot closer when those two teams played earlier in the season. But I do think Baltimore will have enough and Lamar will make it happen because I think they're actually probably, even though the record is not there, the best team in the NFL. If it's not them, there's a good chance it's the Detroit Lions, which is, yes, that is foreshadowing in a way for my pick. But one of the other things from a matchup standpoint that is worth watching, one thing that really leans in Washington's favor, is Detroit has struggled defensively with no huddle this year. And it doesn't have to be hurry up. And in fact, it shouldn't be hurry up. And Washington, for as much no huddle as they run, limits the amount of hurry up they do because they will just get to the line and kind of put pressure on you to be able to communicate without a huddle. And Detroit has struggled with that this year. They're bottom five in the league in success rate and EPA and all these kinds of things. That are when teams are able to go no huddle on them. And I don't know exactly why. And some of their game flow situations, like they might have faced it quite a bit. And they might have been giving up. You know, there might have been some prevent situations where some teams are trying to make up points fast. And so are those numbers are inflated? Maybe. And that's something that I think is probably worth keeping in mind. But purely based off the numbers, that is something where I think Washington can give Detroit some problems. And I do wonder if they stick, you know, to combine some of the things we've talked about today, do you just get out there and pony personnel and just keep running it? Keep Detroit on the field. See if you can wear them out. See if you can make them tired. See if you can test their depth. The problem is the other side of the football. And I just think at the end of the day, if the Commanders hold the Detroit Lions to 30 points, that will be three under their season average. And I don't know if... I mean, I know Jaden and company can score over 30. I just don't know if they will. Ultimately, my pick, this pains me, but I think this is the game where the miracle ride comes to an end. And in many ways, it's not a miracle. It was well constructed. This is not sizzle. This is substance. And no matter what, this season is a success. There's also a really good chance I'm wrong. And if that's the case, oh man, I'm not even eating crow. We're just going to celebrate. We're just going to go. All steam ahead. 30-24 Detroit. That's my official pick. See y'all after the game. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the game.